Views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of 55KRC, The Talk Station, and Clear Channel Worldwide.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, Cincinnati's only gun talk show. Join us. We're going to explore the topic of firearms and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. Now here's your host, John Johnston, on 55KRZ, the talk station.
Good evening and welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me this evening is a real big bottle of DayQuil. Andy's out of the studio because he had some stuff to do, and Jim is MIA as well, which is unfortunate because it really feels like I've swallowed a frog, literally. And also, too, I have taken so much DayQuil that I might say goofy things. Anyway, tonight we're going to be talking with an interesting gentleman. His name is Justin Schneiders. I probably got that close to right. Average everyday guy like you and I, construction worker, teaches CCW classes now. Reason why we're going to be speaking with him, though, is he had an interesting event occur. Everyone talks about, the chances you're going to need your gun, things like that. Justin actually went to visit a group of friends and ended up getting involved in a gunfight. Hey, so I'll get with him in just one second. Want to bring up a couple things real quick. 10 days left to buy the Ballistic Radio t-shirt that's going to benefit Deputy Robin Hopkins. She was involved in a gunfight October 26th. So about 3 weeks ago, still in the hospital, still going to be in the hospital for a while, was critically injured. But all the proceeds from the sale of the shirt go to help Robin and her family. And if you would like to get one, you may purchase them at booster.com/ballisticradio. So other than that, if you've been paying attention to the website, you'll notice that I do not have the schedule, the guest schedule for December and January posted. December, we're going to be doing something a little bit special, and I was going to announce it tonight, but honestly, I want to talk as little as possible, so we'll do that next weekend. Do have some really cool things planned, though, for December and January. Anyway, without further ado, we'll get Justin on the line. Justin, are you there?
Yes, I am. How you doing, John?
Well, I've been better, but hey, I made it, so.
Good deal.
Hey, also, too, and I forgot to tell the listeners this, but I know I told you before the show, we've got some really severe weather rolling through the local listening area. I know a lot of people listen online. We may get preempted with some tornado warnings tonight. If that happens, well, it happens. Sure. We'll have Justin back on to talk about everything if we get interrupted too bad. So, anyway, Justin, if you don't mind, just introduce yourself real quick and just a little bit about your background, and then we'll go from there.
Justin Schneiders. I've been a gun enthusiast for probably not as long as some of the listeners out there, actually. I got into them probably about 12 years ago, and they just kind of snowballed, kind of like what we talked about on one of the websites called Black Rifle Disease. And as I progressed through the rifles and the shotguns, I eventually found my way towards pistols. And we had been waiting for our concealed carry laws to get passed here in Missouri, and when they finally did, I started taking shooting pistols a whole lot more seriously, and just almost as soon as I was able to, I went ahead and got my concealed carry permit, and I probably carried 75% of the time, to be honest with y'all, and sometimes a little bit less. It just happens that I decided to carry the night that it really mattered. So,
well, there you go, and there's going to be a couple different takeaways, and I want to preface this, and I know I've already told you this, but I'm going to point several things out as the show progresses. I'm not being critical of Justin at all. He got home to his family. None of his friends got hurt. Bad guys in jail, so hey, that's a win in my book. But there are some really, really good lessons to be taken from what happened to you, Justin. Number one would be have a gun. I mean, you just said that you didn't carry all the time, usually.
I did not then. I sure do. If I'm wearing pants I've got a gun on me now.
I bet. So why don't you tell us about that night and what happened? We've got about 3 minutes left before the break.
Okay. Make it real quick, or try to. A group of guys and I get together on Tuesday nights, just kind of a social hour type deal, and head out there one evening a little bit late. And actually, I had forgotten my gun, left it at the office earlier that day when I'd been changing to go to the gym, and when I got back, I didn't put my gun on before I went out to Brian's. Brian Stumpy is the gentleman who organized the group. Before I went out there, I was on my way. I thought, you know, I probably ought to stop down at the office and pick up my gun. And it's a really good thing that I did, obviously, considering the outcome. Got to his law office and went inside, talked to him for a little while. There were five of our the other regulars that were sitting outside the office around a fire pit. And I talked to Brian for about a half hour. We decided we probably better go out and join the rest of the group. And just as soon as we walked out the door, basically, a guy walked up to the group wearing a black hoodie, black scarf covering everything but his eyes, black jeans. And I get a little bit criticized for situational awareness on this. You know, that was way out of the ordinary. You have to consider that night it was about 40 degrees outside and raining and nasty, so I can see somebody being bundled up. It didn't throw up the red flags like I thought it, like it probably should have with me.
Well, you know, so, like I said earlier, I'm not going to criticize at all because, like I said, as far as I'm concerned, you did just fine. You're out. What kind of neighborhood is this, if you don't mind me asking?
It is actually about two or three blocks from the state capitol here in Jefferson City. It's not a bad neighborhood. It's an older neighborhood, and it's about a block away from actually from the old main penitentiary here in Jefferson City. So
okay,
so but it's mostly been kind of renovated buildings where it's mostly office buildings and apartments and stuff now.
All right, we've got about 40 seconds left. We're talking with Justin Sneeders. I'm going to say it wrong all night just because.
No, you got it right to start out with it. Sneeders.
All right. We're talking with him about the night he got shot. So 30 seconds. What happened? You see a gentleman walk up to you, black hoodie, black clothes, face is covered.
Kind of scanned him real quick. You know, I was standing back behind some of the other guys, and one of the things I noticed was that he was holding a revolver in his hand. Which was not normal for walking up to our group.
No.
And one of us, somebody made the comment, you know, can we help you? And he said, yes, this is a robbery. He raised the gun up, pointed at the group of us, and said, everybody drop what you have in your hands. We're going inside.
All right. And we'll talk a little bit more about what happened to Justin next. It is time for the commercial break, though. So right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station.
Wealthy and wise, the Steve Perrin Coordinated Financial Planning Studios. This is 55KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station. Brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. For those of you that are just tuning in, your host this evening is battling a bug of some sort or another, so I sound dorkier than usual. Anyway, we're talking with Justin Sneeders about the night he got shot. Justin, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Excellent. So you and a group of your friends are gathered outside of one of the individual's law office. You said it was about 40 degrees or so. A gentleman walks up to the group, dressed all in black, black hoodie, has his face covered, has a gun, and says, this is a robbery. So
yep.
Let's start from there.
We're in this carport area, which is where the fire pit was. There's about two or three steps that go up to a side entrance into the building. The room that you go into is a conference room. They marched us in through the doorway. For whatever reason, I wasn't thinking. What would have been great is if I would have been able to be the first one in waiting for him with a gun drawn already. But unfortunately, I wasn't thinking about that, and I didn't do that. So I'm almost wondering if subconsciously wasn't trying to put myself in between him and the rest of the guys anyway. But in any case, I ended up being the last person going up the steps. He had the gun, the revolver in my back, jabbing me with it, telling me to move faster, trying to hurry us up into the door. There was seven of us total, plus the bad guy. And I still remember, I probably wasn't the smartest thing on my part, but one of the things I tell people is, was I in fear for my life? Yes, absolutely. But there was something about the guy that didn't intimidate me, if that makes any kind of sense at all.
Right.
To me, there's a difference. And I actually turned my head and told him, quit shoving me, you SOB. I can't move any faster than the guys in front of me.
Nice.
Probably not the best thing to say to a guy with a gun in your back, though.
No, probably not. But, hey, live and learn.
Yeah.
I have a question for you just real quick, and then I'll let you go on. When the gentleman with the gun, you know, when he brought the gun up and said this was a robbery, mm-hmm. what was going through your head right then? What were you thinking?
And I know that you're not trying to give me flack over any of this or anything, John. I'm clarifying because I have gotten a little bit of it over this.
Yeah.
There are several guys in this group that are practical jokers.
Mm-hmm.
And at that moment, it was so unexpected and quite frankly caught us all by surprise that I thought, man, one of these guys just put somebody, one of the neighbors or something, up to some kind of bad joke.
Right.
And that flashed through my head first, you know, at first, looked over at my buddy Brian, because he's who I probably was suspected of doing it.
Right.
And he gives me this look and shakes his head no, like, I know what you're thinking and no, it wasn't me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, instantly I know, okay, this is real. As he's marching us up through the steps, you know, it like a mantra going off in my head. It was, this is why you carry, this is why you carry. Mm-hmm. You know, this is real. You're going to have to use your gun.
Yeah. And that's actually really, and like you said, I'm not criticizing at all. It's actually the most common reaction that I've run into as far as talking to people. So he's marching you up the stairs. He's poking you in the back with this revolver. You've mouthed off to him a little bit.
And praying that he doesn't, while he's poking me with his gun, that he doesn't feel mine in my holster. And, you know, I was wearing mine about 5 o'clock in an inside the waistband holster.
Okay.
So I was hoping he wouldn't find that while he's kind of pushing me up the steps.
All right. So what happened next?
We go into the conference room, and there's probably 3 feet or so between the conference table and the far wall. He instructs us all to go on the far side of the table and lay face down on the floor. So there's seven of us. Most of us are, you know, fairly decent-sized guys. And so we're laying head to toe and side to side between the table and the wall. He stays up at the head of the table. I went around to the back, trying to pick the spot furthest away from him to buy myself some time and some distance. And while we're laying down, he actually pulls one of the other guys back up off the floor and to make him carry a trash bag to put whatever valuables he takes off of us to put them into the bag. Right before he had pulled that guy up, he instructed everybody to take off any kind of jewelry, you know, watches, necklaces, take out your wallets, all that. He wanted us to have it out waiting for him.
All right.
And so while he's pulling the other guy up off the floor to make him carry the bag, I'm reaching back for my wallet area, trying to, you know, look like I'm doing what he's saying, but instead of pulling my wallet out of my pocket, I drew my 1911 instead.
Okay. So you were able to do that when he was distracted then, so he didn't see you do that.
Right. And he started, I had just a second to do that
right.
He wasn't watching us. One of the things I kept telling the detectives afterwards is he was very good about keeping us all in a very tight group.
Yeah.
And so he could keep his eye on all of us at the same time. And he didn't take his eyes off of us very often because, believe me, I was looking for any opportunity I could to where I thought I, you know, could do something about it without getting everybody else hurt or killed.
Okay.
And so he, after he gets the guy up off the floor, he scans back over looking at us. I had just pulled it up to about my, pulled it out of the holster and had it up to about my waist. I was still laying face down on the floor, but, you know, looking up at him. When he looked back over at us, the gun was about at my chest, so I just slipped it underneath my chest so he couldn't see it. And what my great plan at that point was, all right, while he's taking wallets and jewelry and stuff off of the other people, he'll be distracted again. I'll have a chance to pop up and shoot.
Okay. So at that point, had you come to the realization that you probably were going to have to shoot him?
Absolutely.
All right. Go ahead.
I was going to say, when I teach my CCW classes and stuff, that's one of the things I also point out to them is that when I got my concealed carry permit, it's really easy to say, you know, yes, if somebody's threatening me or my family, I'll shoot them without hesitation and all that. Well, we've all been pretty much conditioned, you know, don't ever point a gun at somebody else. You know, don't ever, you know, go out, don't try to hurt other people, all that. And that's something that I think everybody should, you know, sit down and decide, you know, before they ever put that gun on, is if I'm in that situation, all bravado and ego and everything aside, will I be able to do what I need to do when the time comes? And luckily, I had already made that decision, you know, years before, and was planning on sticking by it. So that was at least one less decision that I had to make at that point. So.
Well, and there you go. And that was actually one of the reasons that I wanted to talk to you this evening, anyways, because I don't know how many of the past shows you've listened to or not, but I've compartmentalized a lot of different areas of, you know, a civilian gunfight down into different things, and it's interesting because you pretty much experience every single one of them in yours. So you've hidden the gun under your chest. He's keeping a pretty good eye on you.
Right.
What next?
My plan didn't work out as well as I thought it would because I mouthed off to him. I don't know. But instead of working his way down through the group of people and giving my opportunity where he was slightly distracted, he came all the way around the table and came to me first.
All right.
And since I had been busy getting my gun out, I hadn't had time to take my wallet out for him.
Right.
So he pulled it. He was standing up at my right hip and reaches down, pulls up my coat and my shirt to get to my wallet out of my back pocket. And when he did that, he found my empty holster.
Okay.
So
what'd you think about that when it happened?
That was a little bit nerve-wracking. I was not going to lie, I was fully expecting to get shot in the back of the head right then and there.
Right.
Why he didn't, I don't know. Maybe it was just that maybe I took him by surprise a little bit that he wasn't expecting to find that when he was looking for the wallet. It threw him off his game just a bit. But what he did was start demanding the gun, and I told him I don't have the gun. I don't have the gun. I was planning on having a couple of drinks. I don't carry when I'm drinking. I left it out in the truck.
Yeah.
And he didn't believe me, kept demanding it. I kept denying that I had it. And finally he said, get up. Mm-hmm. And he reached down with his left hand and grabbed the back of my coat, started pulling me up. I slid my hands underneath my chest like I was pushing myself up off the floor and got my gun. Had my left hand was down by my hip, by my left hip. I had the gun at about center mass, started turning into him to shoot him. And as I was turning into him, he stuck his gun inside my coat and fired the revolver. The first round grazed my abdomen and went through my coat, into my palm, and then exited out the base of my thumb, tearing up my, you know, kind of breaking up my thumb pretty bad.
Now, which hand was that you got shot in first?
That was my left hand first.
Okay, now I'm going to backtrack just slightly.
Sure.
Where are all your friends at this point? Are they on the ground still?
They are all still face down on the floor.
Okay.
What was kind of funny, but not after the fact, you know, when we all have a chance to sit down and talk about it, and, you know, a little bit comes out here and there in our discussion since then, is that even though I didn't have the bad guy convinced that I didn't have a gun, unfortunately, I had a bunch of my buddies convinced that I didn't.
Huh.
And they were pretty much waiting just to be. They were laying there. They were hoping, I guess, that I was going to do something. And one of the things that one of them said that he was relieved of when the shooting started was that there were two distinct types of gunfire going on. He knew for sure then that I had mine and that I was fighting back. But they all stayed face down on the floor.
Okay. We're talking with Justin Schneiders right now about the night he was shot. So he's put the bad guy has pulled you up off the ground. You've kind of turned into him clockwise, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
and he's fired around, which has struck you in your left hand. How effective was that shot? And we've got about 30 seconds, but, I mean, could you use your hand?
I ended up being able to use it when I had to.
All right.
A little bit later on. I ended up turning into him. I continued to turn into him to shoot him back, and that's when he fired the second time. And I don't know if he was looking at center mass or if he saw the gun and was shooting up the threat, but when he pulled the trigger the second time, it went through my right ring finger knuckle at the base of where the finger meets the hand, and ended up going through the back of my hand, coming out the top of my wrist behind it, and shattering my pinky and ring finger bones in the back of my hand.
Okay, so we've got to go to break right now, but
sure.
Essentially your gunfight had started by getting shot in both hands. So.
Correct.
All right, we'll talk a little bit more with Justin about that when we come back. Right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station.
Hey, it's Brian Thomas. If you did not get a chance to listen to Judge Andrew Napolitano live, pull it up on podcast, 55KRC.com.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. Right now we're talking with Mr. Justin Sneeders, and I'm really having a hard time with that CH right now just because I'm congested and sick. Anyway, if you would like to ask questions of Justin about the night he got shot, you can give us a call at 513-749-5500 or 1-800-823-8255. Try and get to your calls by the end of the evening if we're able to. No promises, as always. Anyway, Justin, still there?
Yes.
All right. So when we left off, you had just stood up, had gotten shot in both hands.
Correct.
All right. So
and
we'll go so for it.
He started kind of backing around the table, back towards the door, giving me his profile. I end up kind of recovering from that second shot, and as he's going around the table, I just squeezed off two quick shots. I ended up missing both of those. I always kind of halfway joke with people saying, you know, hey, give me a mulligan. Both my hands were just shot.
Right.
So, but regardless, I end up missing both those.
What kind of distance was that at, if you don't mind me asking?
What distance?
Yeah.
Cross board room, board table plus maybe a foot or two. I'd say maybe 6-7 feet.
All right.
So I take a little bit of grief from my friends about that.
it's a lot easier to miss than people think, especially when you're taking rounds.
Yeah.
So please continue.
So I end up missing both those shots. I pulled the trigger a third time, and nothing happened. At first, I thought I had a malfunction, which it was. I had some weird thoughts flashing through my head because the reason I carried that gun was because it's the most reliable, most accurate gun I had that I shoot the best with. And
what kind of gun was it again?
It was a Dan Wesson Commander Bobtail,
and
45.
Okay.
And so I just pretty much immediately I dropped behind the table, kind of using it for cover a little bit, and for whatever reason, and this is something else I found really odd. Most of the time when I did malfunction drills and stuff, I probably didn't do them quite exactly right. I had a tendency to use my thumb and forefinger to clear, to pull the slide back.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, it flashed through my head that I had read on a gun board of all places about the top covering with your support hand when you pull the slide back.
Yep.
Because you have more. And I didn't even realize at that point that my left hand had been hit.
Okay.
So I dropped down to clear the gun, tap rack, bang, type malfunction drill.
Mm-hmm.
And saw that I ejected a live round when I did it. When I looked down, there was no stovepipe or anything, ejected a live round. And I also saw what my hands looked like at that point, which was basically bleeding all over the place.
Right.
I got the round out. I popped back up from behind the table. Got two more shots on him. He was continuing to shoot at me when I came back up. By that point, he had he was still giving me profile view and shooting, one-handed at me. And unfortunately, I was shooting one-handed as well.
Mm-hmm.
But he was reaching back for the door with his left hand and shooting with his right. My next two shots that I got off, one of them went through his sweatshirt and T-shirt at center mass, and never touched his skin.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure where exactly the other one was, but one of the rounds ended up clipping him in his ring finger, and the other one, which I think is probably the one that was that went through his shirt and stuff, ended up catching him in the side of his palm.
Okay.
You know, below his pinky, and then exited through the top of the back of his hand.
Right, and I've seen the photos of this. It literally looks like a skylight was cut.
Yeah, the 230 grain 45 did a nice job.
Yeah,
I just wish that it would have been about 3 inches in closer,
mm-hmm.
Instead of just going through his shirts.
Right,
he must have been hunched over just a little bit, but that distance was actually probably closer to 12 to 15 feet.
Right,
like the further away he got, the better I got with shooting, and the worse he got.
Yep.
But at some point, and I don't know when, because I didn't find out about it until afterwards. But at some point, he had hit me a third or fourth time, however you want to count the rounds. If you want to count the one that grazed my stomach as one or not,
right?
But he hit me with one other round that entered lower shoulder, upper chest, that area right above my pec, and the bullet ended up going through, passing just above my left lung, and kind of split the difference between my subclavian artery and my lung, taking out a big vein in between them.
Okay.
So luckily it didn't hit the artery. Anyway, so we're still shooting at each other. Finally, I hear this click, click, click as he's shooting at me, and I realize, and he realizes at the same time, I think, that he was out of ammo.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, before I could even get another shot off, he already had his hand on the doorknob opening it as he was shooting.
Yeah.
As soon as he realized that he was out, he hightailed it out the door and was gone.
Okay. So, I'll ask this real quick, and then we'll move forward. What kind of gun was he using?
He was using a Smith & Wesson Snub-Nose 38 Special.
All right. Full metal jackets or good
That's
ammunition?
That's what we assumed with the way that all the rounds had passed through me and none of them expanded.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little bit chilling when the night before the trial, they did find him. Night before the trial, we went up and reviewed photographic evidence with the prosecutor. And one of the pictures was the revolver with the cylinder swung open, and he was using Spear Gold Dot Plus P's.
Right, which is thought of as pretty effective most of the times.
Right. And I think that he didn't have the short barrel version, and he was using a snub nose. So I'm guessing May just didn't quite have enough velocity to open him up.
Right.
You know, that's all speculation. Who knows?
Yeah. So he's exited at this point?
Correct.
What happens next?
I didn't know if he was going outside to reload. For all I knew, he had another handful of shells in his pocket and was just waiting, going out there to reload, come back in, and continue the fight. So I stood there with my gun pointed at the door, from same position that I'd been in, and waited for him to open up the door. And I was going to, as soon as anybody poked their head through the door, obviously with target identification, but he was going to get shot again. But nobody ever came back through the door. A minute or two passed. Finally, one of the other guys that was down on the floor jumped up and went and locked the door so he couldn't come back in.
Okay. Had you realized how badly you were hurt at that point?
I would say no.
Okay.
No.
So
I thought with the injury that actually hurt the most was the one that grazed off my stomach,
mm-hmm.
and I thought that I had been gut shot.
Yeah.
And so finally, after the guy locked the door, I just sat down on the floor, set the gun next to me, and I don't know if anybody believes me when I say this or not, but adrenaline does. I've been in other situations that are pretty darn high stress.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily for me, in the ones I've been in so far, adrenaline affects me really well by calming me down.
Okay.
I've got a heightened sense of, of everything, just like anybody else does when they have adrenaline, but I'm also super calm.
All right.
And so I set the gun down. And I said, you guys might want to come over here and help me stop this bleeding. And so the guys came over, started putting pressure on the wounds, helped me straighten out my fingers on my right hand. My right hand just felt like it had gone into a real bad cramp.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt better when we straightened out on my fingers. And so I did that, and My buddy said, where else were you hit? I said, nowhere. I said, it's my hands and my stomach. I said, make sure, you know, see how bad my stomach is, you know, how bad I'm gut shot.
Yeah.
And he said, there's no hole there. It's scraped and you got powder burn, but there's no hole. And I said, well, make double sure.
Yeah.
And he said, no, he said, you got blood coming from somewhere else. I said, I wasn't hit anywhere else. He said, take off your coat. So I took off my coat, and sure enough, I'd been shot through the upper chest.
All right. We're talking with Justin Schneiders about the night he got shot. We got about 30 seconds left, Justin, and then we'll go to the break.
Yep.
What was going through your head when the fight was occurring? I mean, had you decided that it wasn't going to happen like that, or
I wasn't going down and I wasn't stopping.
All right, and
that's pretty much it. I didn't want anybody. The other thing that was flashing through my head was, you know, please God, don't let anybody else get up and get in between me and him, because I didn't want anybody else to get hurt. But I wasn't stopping until it was finished.
Okay. Well, we'll talk with you a little bit more when we come back, Justin.
All right.
Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station.
Glenn Beck.
This will blow your mind.
Tomorrow at 9:06 on 55KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station. Brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. If you have any questions for Justin tonight, you can reach us at 513-749-5500 or 1-800-823-8255. Try and get to your calls here when we're able. Justin, are you still there?
Still here.
All right. We've got one gentleman on the line that's got a question, but I want to hear this first, if it's all right.
Sure.
So what was the aftermath of the fight for you as far as what happened medically? You said they caught that guy and he ended up in jail. Can you just give us kind of the quick rundown and we'll move forward from there?
Sure. Medically, they took me to the local hospital to make sure that I was stabilized, and then transported me up to the University Hospital at University of Missouri, where I evidently happened to have landed one of the best orthopedic hand surgeons in this part of the country. And he did an excellent job putting my knuckle back together. There, you've seen the pictures. There wasn't much left of that knuckle.
Yeah.
He ended up building me a new one out of bone slivers and wire and pins. And it's, other than being able to straighten it out completely, it's fully functional. So I had rehab for about a year just to try to get them all strengthened back up, and then I was good to go.
All right.
As far as the bad guy, they ended up finding him from the blood trail. So it's a good thing that I didn't stop, and I did was able to score those hits on him to where I hit him badly enough where they followed the blood and found him. Turns out that when we went through the whole trial and everything, he wasn't of course, they couldn't bring it up in the trial because of past crimes. But I was completely right that it wasn't the guy's first time. He had an extensive history with this and been in prison twice before in Minnesota for armed robbery of groups of people. So,
and why was he out of prison?
He had evidently gotten out of prison for that and moved to St. Louis, where he got busted for, I believe, something like car theft and possession of crack. And so he got put into a little bit smaller security, lower security prison, which happens to be, we've got a kind of a medium security prison here in Jefferson City as well. And he was in there, served his 3 or 4 years for that, and had been out on parole for approximately 2 weeks.
Nice.
And while he was in there, he hooked up romantically with one of the female cooks in there. And when he got out on his parole, he moved in with her, and it just so happens that she lived in the apartment directly above these law offices where we met every Tuesday night.
Well, there you go. So what kind of sentence did he get for trying to kill you?
He got 30 years for the assault with serious physical injury. And the way I understood why they didn't charge him with, and I could be wrong about this, my understanding, with like an attempted murder is basically here in Missouri. The sentence is the same, and the assault with physical injury is a whole lot easier to prove.
Right.
So he got 30 years for that. He got 25 years the armed robbery. He got 10 years for armed criminal action and another 10 years for, I forget the technical term, but it's basically being a felon in possession of a firearm.
Right.
And thank goodness the judge decided to run all the sentences consecutively. So he ended up with 75 years. And because of his priors and because of violating his parole, the way I understand it, he's obligated to serve at least 85% of the sentencing,
mm-hmm.
which puts him in, you know, 60 some years, and he was about 37 when he attacked us.
All right, so he's probably going to die in prison.
Yep, that's what it sounds like.
Excellent. We've got a call real quick. Do you mind taking a call, Justin?
Oh, sure.
All right, we've got Adam from Missouri. Adam, are you there?
I'm here, man.
All right. Thanks for calling in tonight. What can we help you with?
Hey, you bet. Thanks a lot, guys. Thanks for taking my call, John and Justin. First, John, quick sidebar. Man, you got a great show. The episodes are just awesome, the people you have on, especially tonight's episode. This is really heavy stuff, man, and I think it could really save some lives. So,
well, that's
a lot.
I really appreciate that, man.
You bet. Justin, man, you are an inspiration, sir, so try and kind of get to the point. My main question is after this incident and surviving this and all that you've been through, how's your perspective changed on the importance of caliber or the importance of capacity? And, you know, do you believe, you know, with Gomez's old saying of, you know, ammo in the gun is time in the fight? What about, you know, mechanical safeties on guns, especially thumb safeties, the way that your hands were shot up? Has your opinion changed on those things?
Starting out with the caliber, I think that with all the advances that there are in defensive pistol rounds now, there is really very, very little difference that I've seen in, like, those FBI ballistic gelatin tests that would leave you to believe that there's a huge advantage of one over the other, that they seem to be fairly equal now. So I'm comfortable with 9, 40, 45. For me, it comes down to whichever I shoot best, whatever gun. What was the next one?
Grip safeties.
Grip safety and thumb safety. Once again, I'm comfortable with either. As far as the thumb safety, I talked to you a little bit about it, John, that, you know, my first recollection, you know, or guess at it was that I may have flipped off the safety as I was coming up, standing up to turn into him. Just because I didn't remember exactly, I thought, okay, maybe that's when I did it. It turns out one of the guys laying next to me said that he heard or saw me flip it as I was drawing it out. So my muscle memory of you know, drawing and immediately flipping the safety off held true even in a high-stress situation because I developed that muscle memory. So is it one more thing that can go wrong? Sure. For some people, it's a matter of comfort and, you know, whether they – you know, not everybody is as comfortable with carrying a Glock as a 1911, just because of the manual safeties. And kind of what it boils down to for me is I'm not going to tell anybody what to carry or not to carry. It's going to come down to whatever you shoot the best, whatever you're the most comfortable with. Because if you're not comfortable with it, you're not going to be carrying it. If you're not carrying it, then you have no gun for the gunfight.
Right.
So,
Adam, does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. Very insightful. I agree with all of his points. Very good stuff.
Hey, thanks, Adam. Cool. I hope you enjoy the rest of your evening.
You bet. You too, man. Thanks a lot. Right.
Yep.
Thank you.
So, we got 2 or 3 minutes left, Justin. Now, what are you doing with yourself now as far as, I mean, you're doing concealed carry instruction now where you're at?
I am. One of my really good friends up in Kansas City, Chad, decided, kind of pushed me in the direction and, you know, told me, said, you know what? He said, you really have a great story that really ought to be shared with the concealed carry community, you know, to help teach a little bit of perspective and mindset on it and everything. And he convinced me to go ahead and start teaching concealed carry classes. And so that's, I kind of do that as a side job now. And I've really enjoyed it. And I've gotten a lot of experience in helping completely new shooters. I was a little bit surprised by that, of course, because when I went and took my concealed carry course, I'm not saying I was the best in the world, but I at least had a fairly decent amount of experience.
Right.
But it's really neat to take somebody that's never shot before and get them to where they're keeping keeping them in the 9 or 10 ring on a target, you know, on their first outing with shooting.
Excellent.
And to be able to try to teach them about the importance of carrying and the mindset that you don't stop. You just,
yeah.
You know, once it started, there's only two ways it's going to end. You know, either the threat's going to be stopped or you're going to be stopped. And don't know about you, but I know which end of it I want to be on.
Yeah, yeah. Just deciding not to lose. We got a minute and a half left. I'm just curious, and once again, not being critical at all. You went home to your family, and all your buddies were safe. If there was one thing that you could change about how you handled that situation, just one, what would it be?
Oh, there's actually a couple. I mean, if I had a little bit more training here or there, maybe I would have found or seen an opportunity a little bit earlier. That still would have been effective without getting anybody else hurt.
Right.
Maybe I was looking for too safe an opportunity. And, you know, the other things would be, you know, once I got additional training, was I became a lot more comfortable with shooting and moving at the same time.
Yeah.
Granted, I was standing in the middle of a bunch of guys, so maybe my first step would have been tripping over one of them, and,
right.
and then that may not have ended well either. But shooting and moving, instead of just being a big 6'2" broadside target,
right,
would have been helpful. And the other thing is being able to think quickly enough to where, for example, when we were coming through that door, if I could have positioned myself in a little bit better situation where I could have been just waiting for him, and the whole incident would have ended right then and there as soon as you walked through the door.
Yeah. Hey, Justin, I really appreciate you coming on the show tonight, man. I'm glad.
Thank you for having me, John. I really enjoyed it.
Hey, no problem. Glad that you made it out okay. So, next week, we're going to be talking with Daryl Bolke of Hardwired Tactical Shooting about all sorts of cool stuff. Also, too, I'll actually be talking about the 25,000-round torture test I'll be doing in December of this year. Anyway, make sure you check us out at ballisticradio.com. You can also like us on facebook.com/ballisticradio. As always, be safe. Thanks for listening here on 55 KRC, the talk station.